Konami Gaff. Wasting every Saturday night together. Only Toonami.
You thought it was Grixino, but it was I, Dio. Hey, it's episode 28 of the Toonami Gaff podcast. We have Seda.
Hey.
And C-Kohler.
Hello.
And B-Dubs.
Hello.
So, let's get into the news. We get a movie, for some reason, on November 5th. Yay!
Have any of you guys seen
it? I mean, I've seen 5 centimeters a second and some of this guy's other work, so I'm, like, really excited. But then we found out, oh, it's dubbed by Sentai. And I'm like, son of a bitch.
Okay, first of all, I've only heard of, I guess this is the most recent one, Your Name, which is from this guy, which apparently is, like, doing gangbusters in Japan theaters.
Yeah.
But apparently the one movie we are getting, whose name I forget, what was it?
Children Who Chase Lost...
Who Chase Lost Voices.
Yes, okay. That's it.
Apparently this movie, like, the immediate feedback I got from it was that it's iffy at best. So, well,
well, I mean, you know, whatever.
I heard that it doesn't have any action, which seems really kind of a weird reach for this.
I mean, it literally seems like Sentai was like, please show this movie.
Yeah, maybe.
We were like,
and they were like, fuck it.
Sure. Why not?
Maybe it was just incredibly cheap, and that was enough.
And Adult Swim was like, whatever, fuck it.
I mean, I guess at the end, even though DeMarco came out and said that don't use this as a indication of more movies, I still think it's cool that they're going to show a movie.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, it's awesome.
No, I definitely agree that it's, you know, they're willing to try things and just see what happens, and so.
Completely unexpected, too. Nobody saw that coming at all.
No,
I mean,
because he's so adamant, and he's even still adamant that there probably won't be more movies. But just
they probably got a really good deal on it, is all.
It'll be a nice change of pace, even if it's not an especially good movie. I'll go in with tempered expectations, and maybe I'll be surprised. Yeah. I don't know.
You know, it's the extra hour from daylight savings, so you know they usually do get something special for that. I mean, usually it's some kind of like crazy animation thing that gives base forever like nightmares for the next week, but you know.
Well, last year I think they just ended early.
Well, no, last year it was during the Halloween, so those you got an extra 2 episodes of Akame ga Kill in its marathon. But I think the year before that they showed like a DBZ movie or something.
No, I thought we some freaky thing that like. Blood was squirting out of a guy's eyes.
That was a couple of years ago too. I was about to mention it wasn't King Star King. It was something else that was like really raunchy and
Kickheart.
Like not Kickheart. Bass Forever might say that, but it was. What was it?
If it wasn't Kickheart. It had to be King Star King.
Was it King?
That was. Really
it was King Star King and Korgoth.
Korgoth. That is actually seemed like it could have maybe gone somewhere.
Korgoth was the good one.
Korgoth was
the one where Genndy Tartakovsky was the animation director.
Yes, and then King Star King was just like this really raunchy, gory Adult Swim thing, basically.
Specifically targeting the listening to heavy metal while on acid demographic.
Well, what I don't understand about this movie that they're going to show is if we're going to only get like an hour of extra daylight savings, isn't this movie like 2.5 hours long?
Well, it's starting at 3, so they're basically just not preempting a bit of regular late-night Adult Swim programming.
So it's like they're using the extra hour to slot it in, but they're gonna have to cover up some of their... I think they show like Rick and Morty at that time or something.
So we're not cutting into the block.
Oh, yeah.
I think they might be cutting out... It starts at 3, the One Punch Man rerun. Not the premieres, though, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Man, I realize we're only going to get 2 episodes of JoJo before our fucking marathon.
I still feel like having the Halloween marathon is a little bit weird. Like, it's a couple of days before Halloween, right? And, like, the amount of people that go out on parties that weekend, like, a couple of days before, really that significant of an effect on TV ratings? Yeah.
For the Toonami audience, Halloween is not about going around and getting candy. Dress up in costumes, get drunk, and have sex in costumes.
Yeah.
Man, I really should go to a Halloween party then. I didn't realize that. I thought it was just get drunk and... hang out in costumes. I didn't realize there was this whole third part of it. I'm like, what have I been missing all these years?
Unfortunately, every costume is sexy Donald Trump.
Ken Bone.
B-Dubs is like, I'll go with
Ken Bone. I can close my eyes.
But yeah, for this movie, it's starting at 3 a.m., so I don't know what type of ratings they're expecting or how much they paid for it.
I will probably have to buy a monster kit or something.
Luckily, my weekends are pretty open, so I'll go ahead and watch it.
I agree with what was said earlier. I doubt they paid anything for it, frankly. It was probably like a goodwill thing from Sentai.
Maybe.
Yeah, because I can't imagine Sentai has anything right now, but they probably figured it's a good way to sell some of these DVDs.
They're just using it for exposure or promotion, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Sentai does have stuff right now. They have Log Horizon. They have Ushio and Tora. They have...
They have Ushio and Tora. They probably
the problem is
it.
That there's just no room for those right now. Right. Konami has bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, they can get this movie in here as a one-off. At least they're on the block.
Yeah. Honestly, cancel Gundam, bring Ushio and Tora.
Well, Gundam only has, 7 episodes left or something like that, so...
Well, give me Ushio and Tora after it's over.
I saw the opening, animation for that.
Yeah.
And the art style takes a little getting used to, but it does look, I think it was called it earlier, 90s as heck.
Yeah, it's not only 90s as heck, it's Toonami as hell.
It's literally shonen as fuck Inuyasha.
Except better, in every conceivable way.
Speaking of that, I started watching Kuru Mukuro, the mecha anime that was only on Netflix.
Oh, how is that?
It's pretty good.
Oh,
I like how basically it's like they just add in the Inuyasha sit boy in there. You know, the main character has the button for the, outcast samurai's electric collar, and it's just constantly. Anyway, let's move on to the actual block with Dragon Ball Z Kai.
Wait, I'm sorry. What? We still have one more piece of news.
What?
Oh.
There was a music video.
Oh, shit, you're right.
It was called...
Oh, there was.
I don't know what it was called, but it was just about friends. Friendship. Yeah.
Give me a second. Friends. I can get the name.
Well, we were all friends, so, you know.
You're not alone.
You're not alone. Interesting. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
But I feel so all alone.
I thought, this is a One Piece as fuck theme for a music video.
The music video
doesn't really have much One Piece.
I think it's partly because all of the One Piece stuff you would use for that is
from Water 7.
Not only Water 7, but later arcs.
Mm.
The next arc after it ends, at the very end, there's this scene that's
Okay, woo, 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 woo!
See Kohler, prepare the bleeps.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm just saying. I know Seda hasn't seen it.
Right. I'm going to get bleeped? Holy crap.
Well, to refrain, Seda, this is one of the big, gigantic things Seda knows about already, just because it's so big.
You're being really vague, so I don't even know what you're referring to if I do that.
No, I mean, I was just saying at the end of the next arc,
Yeah, big friendship moment there, absolutely.
Yeah.
The one main thing I'm aware of is so it's hard not to be.
Yeah.
Well, so the music video was fine. They haven't done many this year.
You're right. It wasn't blew me away or anything, but it was good, and at least they made it.
Mm-hmm.
To be frank, I don't think they've done one since January.
I have to imagine these things are not expensive because it's just playing a track over scenes, but actually putting one together, it's probably more work than you realize.
Yeah, I think so. They have to find every clip. I always wonder how they do that. Either they have all the scripts for their episodes that they can search on, which I doubt. Or they're literally just going back and watching all the episodes and finding moments that fit the theme and then having to find those and rip them. And then, that's a lot of work.
Well, I mean, they probably watch this stuff too. I can't imagine they don't. Well, at least the guy tasked with this. So, they're going to have a good idea of where to look for everything,
Hopefully.
Because otherwise the job is just and now you watch anime for 4 days.
I don't watch all the pre-flights, but from what I have watched, it seems like Gil does watch everything that airs. Usually ahead of time, but it seems like
in the very least, Gil and DeMarco could give the editor hey, go to this episode at this moment, that's a good one, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, however they do it, it's pretty amazing.
Better than a Gookie main music video.
And you're right, it probably does take a lot longer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, several hours.
A day or two.
Oh, no, I was thinking that those music videos probably are started at least 2 weeks in advance.
Oh, no, that's... No. I think it's more a day. It would probably...
I imagine it's probably, the front of, someone's, late afternoon, maybe once they have, everything else they have to work on done, if they may just set aside... I have to imagine you could probably put it together, most of the work, in, a day,
I know how the video editing stuff works, and that's, it's an afternoon tops. So, yeah. You know, the brunt of it is...
I imagine maybe the big time sink is finding the exact clips to
right.
use.
Yeah.
And determining how to set them, how to put them together.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a lot of audio you have to fix. I do it every week for the show I do on YouTube, and it takes me on average about 4 hours, and that's just 15 minutes. So if you imagine someone has to go out and collect all those clips, and they're only making like a 1 minute thing, that's still going to be like a couple of hours.
Especially because they use like lines from the show, and it's not just like an AMV.
Yeah, where they just take stuff
where
out.
where you just basically put together cool looking scenes and play music over top of it. Yeah. So it's a little bit more work than that to actually get lines that kind of not only fit the theme, but actually like fit together and flow in some way. So, but yeah, it was a pretty good video. I don't think it was like, it probably won't stick with me, but it was fun
to watch. I mean, just thinking about it, the entire staff probably makes suggestions for it or something. Yeah. At least if they, whoever watches.
Yeah, there's no doubt that that's the hardest part is figuring out what to use. And whoever said it earlier, like Gil just maybe taking notes and being like, hey, we're going to do a music video in a couple of weeks. I'm going to start keeping track of these scenes that I like and maybe giving that. And that cut out a lot of time.
Yeah. Well, so let's move on to the block and Dragon Ball Z Kai. Dragon Ball Z Kai episode 90. The opening round is concluded. Goku's moment of decision. So, Seda, what did you think of this episode?
So let me just blanket statement first. So Dragon Ball Z is just a weird thing to critique. It's a weird thing to critique because I feel like I've known it my whole life type of thing. So it's like, it's hard to know, like, to even acknowledge what's good and what's bad. It's just like, I just know it. But anyway, I still think this arc is my favorite despite all the bullshit and all the... Mm-hmm. idiocy from like most of the characters. I still think it's my favorite of DBZ, but throughout the last couple of episodes, Goku's basically been like nonchalant about fighting Cell, and it's been played up as like a mystery, like, man, he says he can't beat him, but he looks so unfazed or whatever, and this is kind of the reveal. This is why he thinks that basically if Gohan fights,
got this,
and this is like next episode stuff, but basically he wants Gohan to get mad and unleash his full power or whatever. But he looks like a dick while doing it. Like, it's actually kind of humorous when you see, like, Cell just, like, punching him repeatedly with one hand, and Goku's, like, sitting there with this, like, really smug...
Good job, son! You're like, doing it! Ow! Yeah. Ow! Ow!
This is
That's my boy!
You got this.
I can buy all of that, but why give Cell a sensu bean?
Why?
I didn't know that was going to happen.
You weakened him.
I know Goku's a fucking idiot, and he loves the fight more than, you know, actually saving the world.
Yeah.
I mean, there are like 5 moments he could have ended this arc already, and he didn't. But I still was just shocked at how fucking stupid that was.
Like, what? No, it was just so dumb, because if Gohan is... And I think he really is that much stronger than Cell. I don't think anything Cell did to him... that episode, like, had any effect on him in terms of, like, real damage. If only because, even without bringing out, you know, his full power or whatever, Gohan is so obviously far above Goku, just from what the two of them have said, which was actually a really nice moment where Goku's like, I'm passing the torch to you, son, because, that was nice.
That's one reason why I like this arc, because it is, even with all the caveats, it's not just waiting for Goku, like, it feels like it always has been. It kind of still is by proxy, but it's a little bit different.
You might have said it a week or two ago, B-dubs, but that apparently the original setup was that Gohan was going to succeed Goku as the main character. If that's true, this definitely feels exactly like that's what was happening here.
I remember...
Or you just kind of know it through osmosis?
I know very little, and that little I know is through osmosis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it even more so later, it really feels like that. It feels like, I can't say this is what he wanted for sure, but it feels like this is meant to be patching the torch, and it'll even feel more like that later.
I mean,
clearly that's not what happens.
No.
No, I mean, I figured that much, yeah.
Like, it's just the sensu bean thing. I'm like, really? Yeah. Why would you do that? Because we can just tell Gohan is that much stronger than Goku. And Goku weakens Cell so much. I'm like, at this point, if Goku went back up to full power, he could probably take Cell.
Okay, now that brings up a good point. I have a question. So I thought that the whole point that Goku was fighting Cell and was like, oh, he's going to beat me, but he had a smile on his face all the time. It was because he was wearing Cell down for Gohan. But by giving him the Senzu Bean, it made that fight completely pointless.
No. I think it. From what I
don't remember if they said it in the last episode or not.
Okay. No, there's a point.
From what I remember from the episode, and I'm just going off of that alone, like Goku went to Gohan and was like, did you see anything? You know, did he hit me with anything that you couldn't handle? And Gohan's like, no, but you're
it was a
holding. Yeah, but and then Gohan's like, you're holding back. He's like, no, that's all I got. You know, it was sort of to show that, hey, you got this, kid.
Man, I can't remember if this aired yet or if it hasn't aired yet, but I'm pretty sure they even get more specific later, like what Goku was trying to do. So
they probably do.
The Senzu Bean thing is
that was fucking stupid.
At the very least, it's written and portrayed in such a way that the whole rest of the cast thinks it's stupid too. So it's like,
we aren't recognizing it.
Speaking of the rest of the cast too, like, this is something that continues to bother me about Dragon Ball. Again, it's Dragon Ball, so I understand. But
it's Vegeta taking the L's, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. But here's the thing. There is a moment in that episode where they go, hey, let's all attack at once. And then they were like, no. Only Saiyan pride matters. And I'm like, what? You could have defeated Cell if all of you attacked at once. This would be over. Like, screw the rules.
Remember that Cell has already killed, like,
most of them.
He's, like, destroyed, like, two cities. He's destroyed, like, Haunted Island.
How many thousands of people has he killed? And then they're all like, well, let's have this tournament.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, in terms of who could actually stand a chance at this point, it's like Vegeta could probably fight him without dying immediately. Trunks, obviously Goku, and Gohan. Like, everyone else would just get, like, endlessly wrecked.
Oh, don't get me wrong. They're all scrubs by comparison, no doubt. But if you ganged up on someone, it would at least, like, divert them.
I mean, it depends. Maybe he's like Spider-Man. It gets better when he's fighting more people at once. You know, because, like, if you've ever seen, like, Spider-Man fight a dude, it's like, he's like, yeah, okay, he's pretty good. You see him Spider-Man fight six dudes, it's like, what the hell is even happening here?
Maybe.
I mean, it could just be, you know, they're afraid of that, or they're just all morons. Personally, I think it's number two.
Well, I mean,
they're just all morons. I
mean, when this Android arc started, you know, months and months ago, they could have just, like, hey, let's just destroy the lab and they're like, we want to test ourselves. And then they train for three years.
They're fucking morons.
Like, what I find kind of silly is they, like, train for 3 years and apparently, like, it feels like that's worthless, and then they, like, go to the time chamber and train one more year, and it's like, now we so much stronger, you know. Just, I mean, that's this whole power creep thing that is a huge problem.
Like, literally several of them have trained for 4 years in this arc.
Like, Gohan got really fucking strong in 4 years. Like, goddamn.
Chi-Chi got strong too, waving that TV around.
I was also very impressed at some of the angles that camera guy was able to get. Like,
how is he getting close up
on Goku's face, and then, like, 2 seconds later, he's, like, in a totally different angle, apparently.
It's the classic, here's this security camera footage that's just, you know, the shot from the show, even though it's clearly impossible that a security camera captured it.
Well, it's got, like, faster than light stock or whatever.
That's a good aperture on that camera.
Hey, he's just doing his job. It's his job to get impossible camera angles.
Well, anyway, so let's move on to the one thing we're all here for, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
A.K.A. Animal Cruelty, the episode.
Donald Trump in anime form.
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Episode 1, Dio the Invader. Okay, C-Cooler. As a complete JoJo newbie who knows nothing about JoJo, let's go.
Okay. First off, I was totally not expecting the Cockney accents. Like, that was out of left field for me. And I have to say, I kind of like it. It's kind of refreshing. You don't hear it in anime very often to hear that. So that's very different. I thought the dialogue was also very well written to sound like it was from that era.
Appropriating his jewelry.
They were using very elaborate words and stuff, and it made me wonder, like, I wonder how this was in Japanese, because that stuff probably didn't translate exactly like that. I don't know.
I remember when I watched some subtitles. Yeah. This is one of the rare shows I saw in Japanese first.
Oh, wow.
But I saw some subtitles. I don't think they were official, but they did kind of, these subtitles I watched also played up like these sorts of sayings.
Yeah, but I guess in Japan, you may have the equivalent that we have of, you know, because you know what I mean? Like, it's, for us in English, it's easy to grasp when you hear old English.
Yeah.
But what does a Japanese person think of old English? I don't really understand how that would translate. But anyway.
They probably used like old Japanese.
Maybe.
You know, like I would imagine they'd use, you know, more like old style Japanese, very polite, you know, that sort of crap.
Yeah. So also, I loved like Dio's dynamic entry when he jumped out of that carriage or whatever.
I forgot that he did that.
That was amazing. Like, that's just so, I can tell that that's a thing in this show, that they're just going to be, like, stupidly stylish for no reason.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
okay.
You have no idea.
And then one other thing is, in speaking of the style stuff, and I guess this is probably from the manga, but they would do lots of things where, like, if someone having an inner monologue or something, they would kind of zoom in on their face, but then you'd see, like, arrows and patterns in the background.
That's onomatopoeia on the screen.
Well, not just that. Not just the, like, if you see, like, Japanese written, but, like, you would see, like, textures and other weird, like, patterns in the background. It looks like it would have been pulled from the manga. I thought that looked cool. And, I mean, Dio's a freaking asshole. I mean, like, absolutely deplorable amazing. Character. I love it.
But he steals
the kind of character I like to hate, you know?
Dio just, he steals everything, every scene. Like, he killed fucking JoJo's dog.
Literally, the first thing he does when he's introduced to the main character is kick the main character's dog.
Yep.
And then he burns it to death.
I mean, I've only seen this season of JoJo, but like...
Have you seen part two?
Yes.
Okay.
And part two is great. Actually,
Paul, you think this part is insane?
Well,
Dio's fucking nuts.
Anyways... Like, even if you don't know anything about JoJo, you probably have heard of Dio, and there's a reason for that. He kind of is, like, popular, like, he kind of steals the show for a while, and, like...
I just knew him from that meme, honestly. Yeah. That's all I knew him from, so...
And it's in the first episode!
When I first watched the dub, again, this is something I actually watched in Japanese first, which is not what I normally do, but, like, these really kind of, like, overdone British cheesy accents... Like, some people, their first response to that is, like, this isn't believable. But I think it totally fits. This is such a corny, ridiculous, over-the-top show that having these corny, ridiculous, over-the-top accents, I think, is, like, perfect. I still am maybe a little bit... I don't know if Johnny Youngbosch as JoJo is maybe the best fit, especially for older JoJo when he's, like, a muscle man. But generally speaking, I think, like, these really overdone accents, I think it just fits perfectly. So I think it's very suitable.
I think it does fit. I just wish somebody more competent than Warner Brothers was doing it.
I actually don't mind it. I mean, I think maybe because it's so different, but, like, I didn't have any problems with the dub, having never heard it before. I thought it was fine.
The dub was fine. Dio is just such a glorious asshole.
Patrick
Stein
is great as Dio.
Like, you could tell he fucking loved, being Dio.
He seems to understand him and just loves to voice him.
Like, how can you not love to voice Dio? You get to be, like, such an unrepentant asshole. It's, like, it's fantastic.
So... I forgot how fast this episode moves.
Don't they cover, like, an entire volume in one episode? It's insane.
It was fast.
They kind of cold opened with, like, this, you know, guy dying from, like, apparently a stagecoach accident or something. It didn't even show it. And then, like, who are these people? And then, like, jump 7 years. And, like, now we have two kids, and it's kind of, like, jumping back and forth between these characters, and it feels like five times in 5 minutes. Like, whoa, what's kind of getting the introduction stuff is done as quickly as it could.
So some people were a bit confused about who was who in that first scene. So basically, you know, the Joestars, George Joestar, his wife, and infant Jonathan were in the carriage accident. And then Dario Brando and his pregnant wife found them. And so I know somebody was like, so is Dio the baby from the carriage? And it's like, no.
No, yeah, even I understood that.
Dio's in the pregnant lady's belly.
I think I've said this about another character on a different show, but I get a a sort of Voldemort vibe from this situation, because you've got, like, I don't know if you know much about
Voldemort,
but like his family, he grew up in like a real bad home and turned into a real dick. And this is exactly the same thing where like his dad is an asshole. And
that's actually a really good analogy, you know, between the two. Like they do mirror each other really well in terms of what they get into. I mean, outside of that, it's completely different, you know, like in the details, but you know, sort of broad strokes, it does fit to a certain degree.
Yeah, because, like, Voldemort is this, as a young man, he's very knowledgeable and intelligent and suave and kind of manipulative, and that's exactly what this Dio guy looks like, so.
Mm-hmm. Except Dio is much more outwardly evil.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if I didn't know any better, I'd say Rowling had read JoJo at some point.
Well, I mean, Harry Potter is basically just British anime. I mean, really.
Well, yeah.
That's true.
I guess. I mean, I don't know British anime, but it always sort of surprised. Yeah, no, like it's the sort of thing. It's always surprised me they never made a cartoon out of it.
Yeah, he's awesome. I mean, like I'm looking forward to next week to seeing more of this guy be a dick it is frustrating to watch the whole episode where, like, you know, you really,
especially because like everybody turns on Jonathan for really no good reason.
Yeah, like Dio's just that fantastic.
Right,
he lies and they eat it all up or whatever he said.
Exactly.
Yeah.
On one hand, it's like, well, at least the girl kind of saw through his crap, and I liked the scene where she's trying to like wash his kiss out. And
that's such a great fuck you.
That was awesome. Yeah. I loved that Dio did not like that. I loved his reaction where he's like pissed off. I'm like, yeah, that's what you get, you dick. So that was pretty cool.
And that's when everyone made the Dio Trump jokes. And that, I thought, let me just mention this. I saw a little bit of complaining about like, why are people making Trump jokes on this on Twitter? But like having that scene just happen to air like a week after all these Trump allegations surfaced, I just thought it was hilarious.
It's fantastic
that people made that connection.
You know, people like the whole, you know, Trump has a stand and it's called the wall.
I saw that.
Stands aren't introduced till the third part.
Right, so. And that's also crazy is that what this series is now, it's very soon going to look nothing like this. It's literally like if all the characters in One Piece were like, you know, hey, we're using devil fruits and such, and then like right after Alabasta, they suddenly just got bleach swords and just fought with pirates. No, it's literally like if they like just switched power structures completely.
Yeah, no, they do that. I think partly because there's only so much you can do with, you know, sort of what JoJo uses up until that point. Whereas stands are a lot more, you know, versatile. It's more like Nen in that you can. Oh, that's spoiled.
I don't know what that is, but anyway, I know that there are stands coming. I have heard of that. I know it's kind of like Persona or something. I was just going to say that. That's all I know.
Well, with JoJo, it's always like, you know, you say something in JoJo is kind of like this, but it's always actually this other thing is kind of like JoJo.
I do have a question, though. Don't elaborate on this, but I am curious. Do we get the order in this first series or whatever?
You don't get the sound effect, but you do get kind of like the punch rush that goes with it.
Okay. Yeah, no.
I forget which is which.
Araki really loves that punch rush.
I forget which is which, but in the dub, they use... And I think he actually said this once in the first episode. He uses useless, which I know is not what it translates to, but he'll be like, useless, useless, useless. And he actually does a pretty good job saying it with that kind of speed.
Aura is a thing that's you know, exclusive to the main character of part 3.
Okay.
Maybe I'm thinking of Muda, Muda, Muda. I don't know what I mean.
But it's a specific sound effect that goes with his punch rushes, but the punch rushes themselves are still in parts 1 and 2.
Okay.
Also, I know this is a thing in the Japanese version of minor spoilers, very minor. Right. In the Japanese version, there's this term "rai" that he uses, right. But in the English version, they replace that with just a more generic hiss. I think so.
I don't think when we get to that moment dubbed in part 3, I think they will probably do "rai" because I mean that's a classic. That's another mimetic scene.
Is it all dubbed?
Well, we'll see.
So part
one, really weird. In part 3, they like did a test dub, which like I guess how common are test dubs? But they like dubbed like three episodes, and this was like back in 2014 or something.
Yeah, Viz dubbed three episodes of part three. Huh. And then kind of nothing happened with that, and then Warner Brothers released their dub of parts one and two, and then Viz got those rights for some reason, and now Viz is confirmed to be completely dubbing part three and four.
Probably just a consequence of all these weird license things that go on with the series.
I was saying a while back, Warner Brothers probably got it because they have licenses for all the music and stuff. That's probably how they got it originally, you know.
And then they dubbed it and did the crappy home release, and they were like, you know what?
Whatever. We'll just let you guys handle it. It's fine.
So, regarding music, we already have our first music reference.
Yeah.
Dio is Ronnie James Dio.
Yes, he is. Who actually died? Didn't he die the other year?
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know who this person is.
I've heard of Dio. He's like a rock classic, hard rock, heavy metal guy.
Right, he's Ronnie James Dio.
Oh, wow, he's been dead 6 years. I didn't realize it's been that long.
Hmm. I mean, I've known him for a long time, but I didn't know if he was alive or not.
Yeah, no, it's been 6 years at this point.
We get another obvious music reference in the next episode.
Well, no, that's not until episode three. He actually doesn't say his name until episode three.
Oh, right, that is right.
Well, he shows up, and he's the greatest bro that ever broed.
So we have to wait 3 weeks for that. Because marathon.
So next week we should get the opening or a cut version of the opening, probably.
Well, hopefully we get the full opening and they just show off their roundabout cut.
What's it
going to be? In the second episode, we'll get the full opening and then cut roundabout. And then in the third episode, we'll get both cut.
Yes, that's probably what'll happen.
It'd be nice if like somehow they could make an exception for one show and like let's just show the full opening.
I mean, we know they can
the full because
they've done that before with previous Viz titles.
I remember Inuyasha showed the whole opening every time.
Well, I always thought that was like a Viz is like, we're not going to cut this shit for you thing.
Good.
They just sped it up.
If that's the case, then great. Let them make the same claim on this show.
Kind of like with Naruto, they just... We're not going to cut the opening. We're just going to literally remove it entirely.
Well, I mean,
they can just entirely remove the opening for JoJo.
Well, I mean, we kind of did ask for that in terms of Naruto. You know, like they were like, "Would you rather see the cut opening, or would you rather we made our own things?"
The other thing with JoJo is that they do great things with their opening, where one would hope that those specific moments they also show it in full, like when they add sound effects in the last time it's played.
I actually forgot about that, or I don't know, maybe I skipped it at the episode. I don't know.
I don't think you skipped the last episode of part one.
Well, he meant the opening.
Yeah.
I don't remember this.
Well,
it's the last episode of part one or part two or season
part. One? But every single time for parts one, two, and three, every time they show an opening for the last time, they add sound effects.
I do not remember this.
You probably skipped the openings.
Probably. I mean, when I'm watching this, I don't need to see the opening 10 tell times. I don't know.
You know, that's an interesting point. I just want to throw this out as an aside. But if I'm marathoning a show, I'm with you. I usually fast forward through the openings.
Yeah.
But if I'm coming back to Toonami every week, I kind of want to see them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of cool that One Punch Man, its rerun, got the full opening.
Yeah, that's interesting too.
Just on the first episode, I bet.
Well, they probably just use the exact same tape.
All right. Yeah. So that's neat. Anyways, I think JoJo, I think coming up, it's not maybe as manic as this first episode was, but it should still be pretty...
Yeah, I mean, they went through a number of chapters with this one, you know? I think it was like a full volume or whatever the hell it was. I mean, the fact that we could actually watch it and it wasn't completely insane was nice, though.
So, another notable aspect of JoJo is animal violence. Hiroyuki Araki loves animals, and so in JoJo...
What better way to make you hate the villain most?
Yes, somebody hurting an animal is literally shorthand for, this guy's gonna get it.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, I have a dog these days now, so when that happened, I was like, no.
I was like, oh, he kicked that dog, that's pretty cruel, this guy's a real dick. And then he gets him burnt to death, and it's like, that's dark.
Like my stomach was all up in knots now, because all I could think of, what if that had been my dog? And I was all sad, and I'm like, no!
But no, JoJo is not a series where bad guys get away with shit.
No, it is not. Thank God.
Except for this Dio guy, who I guess is around forever, right?
Well, you know, he's around forever and also gets his shit beaten in several times.
All right.
Anyway, but yeah, people really get it in this show. If you enjoy satisfying villain demises, you will not be disappointed.
Yeah, I definitely love him. I like a great villain as long as he gets what's coming to him.
Yeah. I mean, it's no fun when they get away with everything, you know? Right. Half the fun of, like, a fantastic villain is how does this guy eventually get his shit pushed in?
Like, I Jonathan mean, already got, you know, his licks in on Dio some.
Yeah, and he already pushed his shit in pretty good.
Oh, yeah, he was crying. The guy was crying.
Yeah.
I also love the line, I'm going to make you cry like a baby, Dio.
And he did.
It's stuff like that. It's just like, it's cheesy and probably wouldn't work in any other show, but it works in this one.
I love the start to that fight where he just bursts through the door and he's like, Dio! And then Dio just like reads the last sentence of his book, closes it, sighs, and stands up, and he's like, what the fuck?
I think that's one of those like iconic. I assume that's a manga panel where he's like pushing himself off his chair with his arms, and like in the anime, it actually did like, you know, the shaky camera kind of effect where it's like, you know, terse atmosphere or whatever.
I don't think the tone of the show feels super over the top to me. I think the accents are maybe making people see it that way more than it really is. I mean, it doesn't seem silly to me, but at the same time, it seems kind of, how do I put it? Like
melodramatic, sort of, like not in a bad way though.
Right. Right. I'd say like, it's kind of simple really. It's just, I mean, I knew what was going to happen almost every scene. I could see it coming, you know, so it's predictable, but it's still really
not in a bad way. Yeah. Like it handles itself very well. So far there've been no real twists. I mean, Dio's been a total dick. Jojo's the good guy. You can see everything coming, basically, but it's all handled so well. And I think the series gives
it a charm.
Yeah, I mean, the series wears its heart on its sleeve, you know, as a series. It doesn't pretend to be something it's not. Jojo knows exactly what it is.
You hit the nail on the head. I think that's what it is. So many anime can be bad, like Akame ga Kill, where it's pretentious and thinks it's more important than it is. And this show is not like that. This show is very like, hey, this is what it is. It's fun.
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. Jojo knows.
Very similar to One Piece in that regard.
Yeah, like they're series that know what they are. They're okay with that. They're going to play into it. Maybe they'll elevate themselves in the process.
But and I that's, feel like that's where series like Bleach and Naruto fail.
Right. Had it ended on like a glorious Master Aizen troll, I would have been like, this is a masterpiece, if only because it would be a Dottest masterpiece, but it didn't. So
just using Bleach as an example, it show a lot of anime, they'll have scenes or takes where it's like, I anticipated your move, and then like, no, I anticipated your anticipation, and then like they're playing it totally straight, and they're trying
but
to
that actually like, is part two.
Well, I know, but they're not playing it so straight. It's just it's hard to describe, but like JoJo is like this weird mix of like energy and wackiness, but it doesn't like go too far in that direction. Or
it's not deep. That's the thing. It's not trying to talk down to you and be like, look at this piece of art we've created. This is a masterpiece.
Like
this is deep. You need to really think about these topics. It's like, no, this is just a bunch of guys punching each other. It's fun.
Yeah. No, Jojo knows what it is. It does help that it's sort of aping one of, like, the first arc is sort of aping one of the great novels of, you know, English literature. So, you know, and it's not Dickens. I'm just putting that out there right now. You'll understand in an episode or two. Like if you read the book, you'll see it pretty quick. But I mean, it does help that, you know, like I said, Jojo knows what it is. It doesn't pretend to be something else. So when it does something silly, like, you know, oh, I anticipated your anticipation, it's like, yeah, okay, whatever. Jojo's being silly now.
So say that I did want to say that I do think Prone to Fisticuffs is a perfect thread title.
No,
I think it got lost in the shuffle, but
I'll probably do that.
I always love it when something says like, and now we will engage in fisticuffs. I'm like, that's such a polite way to say we're going to fuck each other up.
I dwell on it too much, but that was like my original point. It's like, what did they say in Japanese? Because it surely wasn't fisticuffs, but whatever.
I just think that's a perfect way to, you know, politely describe Toonami.
Yeah, and now fisticuffs.
It is true. I guess so many shows have fisticuffs in them.
I just want Tom to say, let's engage in fisticuffs.
That would be great.
You hear that, DeMarco? Make it happen.
Somebody should tweet him. Okay, so I guess that's it for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Although we could just spend all the Mobile Suit Gundam time talking about it if we want.
I've got things I want to say about IDO.
Okay, so Mobile Suit Gundam. Mobile Suit Gundam, Iron-Blooded Orphans, Episode 18, Voice. Okay, so...
Can I start off with...
Go right ahead.
So last week in the podcast, basically, one of my biggest criticisms of the show so far is that I feel like it hasn't really established...
Why?
...this conflict between Gjallarhorn and these rebels to Gjallarhorn and what exactly they're rebelling about. Some caveats. Yes, Gjallarhorn seems to have sabotaged the rally... And so, like, okay, yes, they.
But why the rally?
Not,
like, in the
they're
first
not. They're
place.
Not like right. Like, they're not. Gjallarhorn is not like the bastion saint or something. But I'm kind of confused. Like, what is this protest talking about? Like, I don't like. It's the larger picture stuff with the show that is most.
Right.
We did learn one bit. We learned
well,
one.
Let me continue.
Okay.
So, like, I was like, well, this episode apparently is going to be Cordelia. She's going to now take lead of this movement. And she was even going to say, like, let me tell you about these colonists and their problems. But she didn't even really say anything. She's just like, no. These people have been oppressed and they're under the rule of Gjallarhorn. And it was just like really vague stuff. And so let me start with saying, I'm a little bit confused why Cordelia wanted to be some sort of revolutionary leader in the first place. So that's one element of it. Why does she want to be this revolutionary leader? I think we saw her like see some homeless people one time, and I'm also a little bit confused. I'm also a little bit confused why other people look to her and say, "Yes, this is our leader." Like, what sort of? I know she comes from apparently some high family, but I'm a little bit confused.
It's not explained enough.
I'm a little bit confused, like why these rebels look to her and say, "Yes, this is the person to lead us." But I'm like, they haven't really shown like why these people put so much faith in her.
Yeah,
like, what qualifications does she have?
Yes, and I think I feel like if I went back and watched the first episode, there is probably a 10-second moment in that episode that would explain why Cordelia is what she is, because I got the impression. And it's probably a false memory that she is, I don't want to say royalty, but she's some kind
something
of...
Something like that
on Mars. And so she has the authority to speak for Martians. But that's as much as I know. The other thing we learned in this episode is some of the backhanded dealings that were going on that tried to get her to give this speech and all this other stuff is because there were certain parties who were interested in stuff on Mars called half metals. Which I took to be his code for hair gel.
Yeah. I mean, this is exactly what the politics of this series needs. Yet another aspect that we don't really get.
Yeah, it's just more hair gel bullshit. No, but I did sort of grasp, like, somewhere in there, there's space racism.
Yes.
Like, it's not very strong, but... Space racism is an undercurrent along with the hair gel mice.
I didn't know.
I guess my assumption is that the half metal thing is basically a bunch of these large powers. They want to help with Martian independence because then they have the expectation that they will get a good deal on that half metal.
The hair gel, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to call it hair gel from now on, by the way.
Okay. It's just going to be hair gel.
But I didn't really feel the racism stuff. They really hammered that in this previous recent episode. Apparently, the differences between being a Martian and being an Earthling
and being an Earthling.
So when this show is first starting, like when you're watching a show for the first time, you kind of make predictions for yourself, like what's going to happen, which characters become important, and like the
None
character.
Of this makes sense.
The character Ein. He was a Gjallarhorn person.
Right.
Like from the get-go, he was like the only survivor from that initial attack those first like three episodes. So I kind of think like, okay, this guy is going to play some larger role. He seems to be Gjallarhorn, but he's not like the evil guy. He doesn't seem like he's the Char guy. whatever his name is. There's Nicholas and his blue hair gel sidekick. But anyways, like I felt like this Iron guy was gonna play a bigger role than he has, and then like they kind of just bring him back 15 episodes later. He hasn't done anything in the last 15 episodes other than just kind of like provide some very basic chatter here and there. And
then, ironically, like, he's the one of the villains whose thing is like he's the one who really has it out for the
but why? As narrow as it may be, some of his friends were killed, and so like he has.
And let's
more
not forget that Mikazuki just straight up executed Crank.
Yeah, so
he did that.
What I'm saying here is, first of all, they kind of brought him back to like kind of shoehorn this like half Martian racism thing into it. Like, I guess this is a part of the show now. But like, this is where I feel like some of the storytelling doesn't feel like it's paced all too well. How he like this guy was introduced really early on, but he hasn't done anything in the last 15 episodes because they've been doing this human debris stuff and then Space Costco stuff. So it just. I know that some people have said in the thread that this is a 50 episode series because it's two seasons. So some stuff just might take some time to develop, but I still feel like this maybe could have been like, rather than having these long stretches of time, like the human debris stuff doesn't even seem like it was that important to the picture at all. So just some weird pacing and storytelling things here.
I mean, like before human debris, Akihiro doesn't matter. And then after human debris, he still kind of doesn't matter. He just has a mech.
Yeah. It just sort of occurred to me, like, why aren't they treating this guy more like Team Rocket in terms of being sort of a constant antagonist? Like, maybe he could have been behind sending these guys over to, during the human debris arc to kill him.
Yeah, I think that's one of the main problems with the show is that the antagonists don't really feel like much like
antagonists
to me yet, because I'm not exactly sure what Gjallarhorn has done that's been so bad. Yes, they kind of, in the most recent episode, but two episodes ago, they sabotaged this rally. But before then, it was like, what have these guys done? So I'm
they're Earthlings. That makes them terrible, apparently.
Yeah,
They have space racism. That's what they did wrong.
Yeah, although we didn't learn about it until just now, which is kind of stupid, I guess.
Well, they mentioned it a lot earlier.
Space racism was hinted at a little bit earlier, but it's one of those things where the pacing of the villains interacting with the good guys hasn't been good at all. Like if you go and you watch Samurai Jack, like Jack doesn't fight a coup every episode, but God damn it, who's behind most of the shit that happens to Jack?
Yeah.
That's my main criticism of the show, is kind of like these larger narrative things that just don't really be established and don't run well. But I do think, and this is kind of what I attached on to early on in the show, is I feel like a lot of the characters I was fond of, and that I'm starting to think that there's maybe good characters placed in a bad show type of thing.
Yeah, you said that last week.
And I think Atra has like really turned it around.
Yeah, so Atra is great. I loved her line this week.
Like she's,
I'd like to do revolution.
Yeah. It's like Atra going on me. Atra and Cordelia have literally like switched places in terms of quality.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know that this is a very minimal test, but I think the most previous episode had two cases where it passed the Bechdel test.
And I always like the sexy lamp test better.
I will take that. That's a great point.
That's exactly what it is. That's what turned her character around. She suddenly passed that test.
And they're actually talking about mostly it's because they're talking about Cordelia, which isn't super
compelling. It's not good.
But it still passes it. And there was two cases of it. And let me also just kind of mention, at the very end of the episode, when they kind of just let out their emotions, I felt it was an okay in theory, but it was
badly executed.
Yeah, that made me
and crazy. Mikazuki's just kind of like, now kiss.
And that was, so I really like Mikazuki up to this point, but that was the first time where he really felt like truly robotic to me.
It's like an emotion is a simple emotion that every human would have is like alien to him. He's like, well, I guess hugging people makes them feel better. What? How do you have you never touched a person in your life?
I'm a child soldier.
This is hard to describe.
He kissed her that other episode.
Up to this point, I got, and I know everyone will perceive this differently, but up to this point, I kind of got more of the feeling that Mikazuki understood emotions, but just kind of chose like more not to be very expressive on his own.
Yeah.
But like this time it was more directly like, I literally don't understand like me being Kazuki. Like, I literally don't understand what I'm supposed to be feeling here.
It feels like they changed his character.
And like someone,
this is like Data from Star Trek Next Generation level of not understanding emotion.
And then
Data understood emotions better than this.
And I think this was the very first time someone literally had to tell him, this is Atra in this case, you're supposed to do something here to make her feel better. Like, I think that's the first time where they kind of acknowledged that he doesn't get emotions all the time.
But
it's true. Although I will say, this is counter to something that happened a couple of episodes ago
where
he kissed her because he knew for some reason that kissing her would make her feel better.
There was also an earlier episode, and this is such a small thing, but it really resonated with me, where like he's just eating, you know, lunch or something, and Atra comes up to him and is basically like, are you going to be okay? And then Mika basically says, sure, I'll be fine. You gave me this good luck charm after all, right? Like, no, he doesn't. He doesn't truly believe that the good luck charm is going to keep him safe.
Right.
He understands that, like, acknowledge this good luck charm that she gave me, it'll make her feel like I appreciate her and what her gift.
Yeah. So his emotional understanding is very
informed. It's going backwards. Like,
that's what I felt.
Like, it feels like they completely changed the character from last episode to this episode. I mean, it's just such an awkward thing where it's like, yeah, okay, he's just, you know, very inward and with his emotions. He doesn't deal with them very much, but he gets it, you know? And now it's
like, this time.
He doesn't get it, which...
Like I said, this is the first time he felt truly robotic, like not...
Yeah.
Before it was kind of like to me, it was like kind of this interesting, like detached personality, but now okay, now he's truly robot.
Now he's a robot, and it just doesn't make sense. Just, you know, keep that shit straight.
And I mean, some people might argue that he was a robot the whole time, which, you know, that's, they can make an argument for that. But I felt like it was a little bit more to it.
There was more nuance.
I thought he was a robot, and then I heard what you said last episode, and I agree. I think he's holding it in because for whatever reason, the way he was brought up, he feels like he has to hold that in. But this was an instance where it was like he doesn't understand it, and that's different.
So. Yeah, a lot of people will say it's a nitpicky difference, but it's really not. It's like a fundamental shift in his character.
Yeah,
it's like you go from somebody being a really nice person to a total bitch for no reason. Like, it's maybe it's not quite as dramatic as that, but it's still dramatic enough where I have a feeling a lot of people noticed it and thought it might have been weird.
I think they just needed an excuse for him to hug both of them.
It might have been.
I mean, he could have done that without, you know, being told, though. You know,
I think though I mentioned this already, but I that wasn't the only problem with the scene. Just kind of like, even with like he literally like went up and hugged her head, and then like grabbed Atra, and then they're like in this kind of like weird like pose, and like
can't escape Donald Trump tonight.
He was pressing him against his breasts.
I feel like that last scene would have been better if it was maybe just Cadelia and Atra like hugging and crying it out a little bit, and maybe he put like his arm around one of them or something like that, rather than this like weird pose where he's like up floating and like has them one in each arm and they're like kind of both curled up. And it's just
like I said, literally, it's now kiss.
Yeah.
it was just weird. I mean...
Well, here's another. I've got a couple other things on this show we can talk about. One of which we have to mention: Space Hitler is back.
Oh yeah,
Space Hitler. I forgot he came back. Actually,
well,
I'm sure we're not going to see much of him, but he's back.
I don't remember what it was exactly, but I remember that Orga was going to like off him at one point, and then the turban guy Naze was like, "Dude, you don't want to do this."
So, he's Space Hitler. You really do.
No, that was pre-Turban, I think.
This is something I realized this episode too. His name is Naze Turban.
Yes, and they're called the Turbans.
Right? But
and they're a big harem family.
They're a harem, like a person with a turban would wear if he had a harem.
Like he's really it's kind of fucking racist a little bit.
Literally, like, every one of their scenes now is just, look, this is so bad. Let's have sex.
Well, and I think Rex actually mentioned this in the thread. Like, there's these two turban girls. They're like the main ones. It's Laughter and the other one. But like outside of like their first confrontation, they're just kind of sitting in the hangar, and Usually the thing they talk about is like we're watching these guys train or something. And it's so I think some of the character dialogue in the show is kind of not really plot worthy, but it kind of maybe shows insight on characters and maybe some development here. But the Turban Girls are just like usually talking about something kind of pointless or dumb, like look at these guys train and that's it.
They're kept around so that if the show ever wants to kill off a large amount of characters at once, there you go.
There you go.
Also, they're eye candy.
Like I mentioned how I like a lot of the characters in the show. I think the main Turban guy is maybe okay, other than his harem fantasies.
Yeah, like but that's just
a lot of Turban characters.
It's a reality.
A lot of the Turban characters are kind of pretty shallow and pointless. And
I mean, there's too many of them. You know, you can't develop all of those characters in life.
There's like his main squeeze, whose name I forget, who is like apparently horny all the time. And then there's Laughter, who's probably the most interesting one.
And then there's Serious Face Girl, who I can't remember her name.
Right.
I can't remember any of their names.
And those are literally the only four Turban characters we know the names of.
I'm not saying that like every character has to be like important. There can be main characters and side characters, but I feel like they introduce these characters and really haven't done a whole lot with them. So,
yeah. The only other thing I'll say about this episode was that the reveal, the big reveal of who's behind the mask, and it was so. Even the show's own character is like, oh yeah, we know who that is. That's Chocolate Man.
Is that Chocolate Man?
And like, it's literally just Miku Zuki's like, hey, it's that guy,
which makes. If that side character, or not side character, Mikazuki, I guess, if Mikazuki could see through that mask immediately, what is the point of the mask? Yeah. It's not fooling anyone.
Well, no, I mean, it's Gundam. They have to have a Char clone. That's just how it is.
I think I said this in the thread. Like, I don't really blame a lot of the characters for not recognizing him because they met him once on, like, a road on Mars for, like...
I mean, only Biscuit, Cordelia, or no, Cordelia has maybe seen him. Only Biscuit and Mikazuki have actually talked to him.
Yeah,
I guess.
And
I just say how much I love the fact that we have a character named Biscuit
and Cookie and Cracker.
Like that's fantastic.
Did we ever hear his brother's name?
Saverin.
Saverin is some kind of cake or something.
Not bagel.
No, they named him Cake.
It's just Saverin's a fancy word for.
But cake. But I agree with Chris here. Like the whole like. Mask thing kind of felt like it was kind of
useless.
Like,
we need a Char clone. Okay, why not throw a mask on this guy?
At least they didn't drag it out. I'll give them that because if it was one of these things they had to check off a box to have it in a Gundam show, at least they didn't do it for like a season.
They could have revealed it in the second season. Yeah.
Oh God, shoot me now.
I like how his Montauk company seems to just be like, we specialize in overly complex backdoor plots.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Mm-hmm. It's like he's wearing that mask. Is he really fooling these like Yakuza people? I mean, come on.
No, it's like they can't be that dumb.
Someone in the thread, you know, has the amusing like visual. Like, can you imagine him like choosing which wig he wants to put on? Like, I've always wanted to wear this really long silver wig. That'll be my disguise.
That's my disguise.
Like that's this is what I choose to wear when I'm hiding my identity.
I mean, it's like that. Did anyone ever see the movie Stardust? And the scene where Robert De Niro is like the pirate captain, he's cross-dressing dancing around. And now I've just imagined, you know, Chocolate Man doing that, and it makes him a much better character.
I'd watch that show.
I mean, it just kind of turns him into Agent Peacock.
That would be better.
Well, I guess we've said our piece about Gundam, so let's move on to...
I still just wish... They would just explain all the shit going on in the background, so at least we know what the hell's going on.
In a nutshell, I feel like some good characters, bad larger show expectations, and also like I feel like the conflict hasn't been established very well.
Right. Like we know there's a conflict, but we have no idea over what or why or what the hell's going on.
We're rooting for them to stop Gjallarhorn from...
Yes, it's just so they can control the hair gel mines. That's it. We're leaving it at that.
The hair gel mines of Europa. They're not even on Mars. Yes.
No, they're not.
Hunter Hunter. Hunter Hunter episode 24, The Zoldyck Family. So that ends kind of odd.
Well, I mean, that's sort of the only place it can end, considering these guys, you know, their power level.
The regular shonen thing would be they would bust into the mansion, defeat all the Zoldyck and free Killua, but yeah, obviously that happening. Would not work here. They'd get wasted in 5 seconds.
It wouldn't even take 5 seconds. They'd try and get into the mansion, and the butlers would off them.
Like, they couldn't even legitimately get past the first butler.
Yeah.
So the first half of this episode focused on Canary. It was like a backstory, how she knew Killua. And in a vacuum, I really like this scene. It kind of gave Killua a little bit more. I think in terms of like backstory, I think Killua's is probably the most interesting, maybe Kurapika being second most, because we don't know what happened, where we haven't seen directly with his backstory yet. So I thought that was nice to see. And what do you guys think about like how it kind of like introduced Canary in the last episode and she got shot? And then I'm wondering, like, showing
I think
the backstory,
they just screwed up the order.
Apparently, in the 1999 version, they actually did kind of put the backstory before getting shot.
I kind of feel like either way, it'd be a little awkward. Like, when you first introduce the character, you show a backstory, like, immediately. Like, no,
I think in the manga, it was while she was beating up on Gon. So, like, it worked fairly well there. So I was surprised to see that they changed it up just to go for, like, you know, the shock ending. So that kind of annoyed me.
I thought she got shot, and, like, she's okay.
Yeah. No, she's fine.
Okay. Why is that?
It's Hunter x Hunter. It takes more than a bullet to... If you're fully trained in Hunter x Hunter, it takes more than a bullet to kill you.
Basically, everyone in Hunter x Hunter is just a One Piece character where they take obscene amounts of punishment.
Well, yeah. It's better explained, though.
It's not quite like this, but it kind of reminds me of Soul Eater... This is when it gets into filler, where like Krona gets killed, and then like it's a really emotional moment, and then Maka basically goes nuts on Medusa, and then like next episode it kind of just dilutes that, like, oh, he was fine the whole time. It kind of feels like it's going a little bit more for shock value over like substance here.
Yeah. How these characters take so much damage does get explained later on.
Very, very minor story, or very minor spoiler question, maybe. Is Canary, like, more important later? Like, is this a semi-main character, or no?
No.
She comes in a little bit very, very later on, but we don't come back to the Zoldyck for a long, long time.
I kind of feel like her whole character feels like it wasn't, almost like there's not enough there. But, like, I wish there was maybe more to her, because it feels like they put some effort there, but it almost feels like it's not enough. Like, why do I care about this character? You know, it just, I don't know if I'm explaining myself well. It just
I think
feels
the problem
like
is, that the, there. Is that the flashback is focused on Canary, but it's actually supposed to give you more
about Killua.
About Killua.
No, it showed that Killua wanted friends way back when.
Yeah, but it was too focused on her, though.
And kind of an aside, so I think the voice acting in the show is pretty well done.
Yeah.
But Canary was kind of the first voice that's like less than decent. Like, that's like the first voice I would say I really wish they probably tried something else. I have no idea what she sounded like in Japanese, but that was kind of the first time where I was actually like cringing a bit whenever she was talking. That's just kind of an aside there.
The soundtrack in this show is excellent.
Oh, I love the soundtrack.
That Zoldyck theme that plays is really awesome. And some of the other themes they played in this episode, too, were really good.
Mm-hmm. I love the soundtrack of this show. And Jason thinks it's carnival nonsense, whatever he said.
What did he say?
In one of the pre-flights, I think he called it like it sounded like music you hear at a carnival.
So he doesn't, like the soundtrack?
No.
What's wrong with him?
Well, I guess I could see that for maybe one or two tracks, but that song they played this week was really good.
Like, in general, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Jason does not seem like a guy who actually watches forward.
No.
No. I mentioned earlier, I think Gil watches everything, but Jason probably just kind of watches a few episodes. Like, yep, that's it. I'm not saying he has to because he's probably really busy. But...
No, but I mean, like, if something grabs him, I'm sure he'll, you know, keep it on.
It's the multi-hundreds of episode stuff that probably...
Speaking of which, I can't wait for the Part 2 JoJo soundtrack. The only good dubstep soundtrack.
There is no such thing as a good dubstep soundtrack.
But no, because Part 2 of JoJo's Bizarre Adventures soundtrack exists. Anyway.
And, the other part of this episode was they kind of show off all the Zoldyck. How do you pronounce the last name?
Zoldyck.
his old dick,
yeah,
family, and then they're going to introduce, well, first of all, we see Killua being, like, tortured, and I guess he's getting tortured because he...
He went away.
You left, so they're just...
Yeah.
And then he's it doesn't faze him. He's just like, are we done yet?
No, like, he literally is getting tortured by that guy because he feels sorry for stabbing him. And he's like, you should be able to get back at me.
Oh,
and then, like, when he frees himself, he's just like, dude, I could have left any time.
But they kind of introduce...
He's been through way worse.
What I was getting at was they introduce his father, and you're kind of expecting, like, this... At least I was expecting this, like, villainy type character. I don't know if he's a villain, but like an intimidating, you know, assassin head of family. What else do you expect? And turns out he's like, this guy seems like he's a better father than Gon's father, who just kind of left him.
Yeah, I kind of don't want to talk too much about this guy because I'm afraid you guys who've seen it might say something. But I feel exactly the same way, Seda, that like this guy surprised me in how nice he was to Killua. But then there was a scene at the end where he was a little devious, and I kind of feel like that was maybe his real character showing through.
Yeah. I mean, it's not. I mean, I don't think they're contradictory. He just like, you know what, you go do whatever you want, but I'm confident that you'll come back to me.
I was kind of toning out, I guess, at the very end of the episode. But like, yeah, he said. I know he said he'll come back to me. So is he like worried that like Killua will leave? And I guess
I think that's the point. He's not worried he'll leave.
No, like he knows he's coming back.
Whatever, because he knows he either has some control over him, or he's basically saying it doesn't matter what Killua does.
He'll be back.
He's gonna
Why does he want Killua back? It's not like a father wanting his child to live with him.
He wants him because they said in this episode that Killua is like the best assassin to ever come out of the family.
He has the most potential. I could see it maybe being where he maybe views Killua more as an asset than a son, but he seemed to be pretty genuine and caring about what he did. So I'm not exactly sure.
I'm not convinced if that's for real or not, though.
Yeah,
I read it as he thinks this is just a phase, but he's totally willing to let the phase play out.
Yeah, like he's not. You know, a horrible, horrible human being, despite being, you know, an assassin. for an assassin, he's actually a really good dude. But I mean, like, at the same time, he's like, he's willing to let this whole thing play out and let Killua go do his thing and, you know, all that stuff, knowing he'll probably come back at the end.
I don't want to dwell on it, but the Hunter world just every week just makes me just laugh at how kind of ridiculous it is. Like there's this world where like people can be assassins and then like everybody's cool with that. Like this is great. We got this whole family of assassins.
They're literally giving a guided tour, like this is where the assassins live.
who's gonna mess with these guys though?
But I mean, like, you wouldn't be happy about it. What if they came and killed you?
Well, no, I mean, like, most people can't afford these guys. You know,
you could be their target. Why would you want them around?
You got to understand, like, these guys are, like, you know, expensive shit. Like, you got to be a government or the Hunter organization or something to afford
them. I feel like if you're weak enough to have to be worrying about them coming after you, you're probably not their target.
Yeah.
I'm just saying,
they're the guys you call.
Celebrates assassins just seems like it's so, like, out there. Like, they're murderers.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're sort of the guys you call when there's no one else that can do the job, you know?
You like call them the Zoldyck to kill the boogeyman.
I will say at this point, now I know we're only like, what episode are we on, 20?
24.
20, yeah.
Wow. I will say at this point that I feel like one of Hunter x Hunter's weaknesses right now is probably world building. Like,
yes.
It's like I don't really know what goes on in this world other than that there's hunters and that they're apparently like super spies and do whatever.
Let me take what you said, Seda, and change a little bit. And this is what it's not that they aren't building the world. It's just a confusing world that they're building.
Perhaps, yeah.
Yeah. Part of it is that, how do I explain? Like the world's a lot more complicated than sort of anyone knows. And there's a big like part of it that's in, I'm not sure if it's intentionally being kept in the dark, but there is a huge part of it of how this world works that the reader isn't being told quite yet, and we don't get told for a very long time.
Okay.
That, it, you know, like it's
on
weird.
The, all I was going to say was, yeah, on the flip side, I think I'm actually enjoying the show a little bit more past the Hunter exam arc. It's getting a little bit more into, like, character building. Like, we're,
yeah,
like Killua before was just kind of like this punk brat assassin guy, but like we're learning more about him and his family, and so like I feel like it's getting a little bit more onto this personal level are these characters our protagonists in the first place type of thing.
And what you said earlier about Canary is like, is she important or not? Well, maybe she's not important to the long term from what you guys are saying. But what is interesting about Canary is that what we revealed in this episode is that she was really unknown to Killua, his first friend.
Right.
Yeah.
She had to hide that from him. But that was the point of the episode, was to show that Killua did have a friend and he didn't even know it.
Yeah,
I agree.
I mean, in terms of what Seda said, like the show getting better, like, yeah, the Hunter exam arc is generally considered to be the worst arc of, you know, what is really a fantastic show. And it's not really until the next arc that we sort of get a better picture of what sort of shape the show does take on later on.
I do just want to say something about the world building thing. I feel like the problem right now is that the show is, you know, giving us a lot of stuff that's really weird about the world. And then, just right now, it doesn't really, the world is just not important.
Right.
Right.
Mm.
So it's like why are there assassins just living on a volcano and everyone goes to see them? And it's like, shouldn't you explain that? And it's like, later, we've got other stuff.
It's not important right now.
Information about the world in the show seems to be doled out on a until it's actually relevant.
It's doled out on a need-to-know basis. Like, if they front-loaded everything, your mind would just break from, like, all the weird shit that goes on. Because, I mean, if you're saying it's weird, like, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Gotcha.
Well, I guess we should move on to Naruto Shippuden. Naruto Shippuden, episode 131, Honored Sage Mode. Hey, this fight's actually pretty exciting.
This is a good episode, holy crap.
Every once in a while, they'll have these episodes that they put some, at least has some animated budget to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the animation was stellar.
No, I mean, how these long runners usually work is they'll pick out episodes later on. They'll be like, okay, we'll spend all our money here. And, you know, everything else will be cheap as shit.
And then if you're One Piece, you don't even do that.
Well, I mean, they do it every once in a while.
Yeah, they do it more than this show has.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got something to say about this episode, and I'm probably maybe repeating myself a little bit here, but here's the thing. So Jiraiya's fighting Pain, right, and Pain is doing all kinds of crazy thing with dogs, and dogs are splitting, and they're changing, right, and this stuff is happening, and Jiraiya is like, well, this is weird. What's going on here?
Yeah.
Me as the viewer, I'm like, what the hell is going on anything? Like, I don't understand what is and isn't possible in this world. So why would I understand that these dogs splitting up should be something unusual when he's got a freaking 20-foot tall frog that just keeps saying, I'm ungraceful? Like, I don't get it.
The thing he's getting at is that it's weird that Pain is using just animal summons.
Yeah.
And
he can
literally
do anything.
Nothing else.
Yeah, because the thing with Pain is, like, his eyeballs let him do literally everything. Like, it doesn't matter what it is, he can do it.
Well, getting to see Kohler's point, on the previous podcast, and I think he even mentioned this in the thread, like, talking about, like, this backstory to Naruto, like, he sealed the yin chakra, but not the yang chakra, and what does this mean?
Yeah, like,
I put this seal in this key, but I didn't actually touch the seal, and it doesn't make any sense.
No, I mean, a lot of it you can sort of chalk up to the writer not having thought any of this through in advance.
And we also talked about, does it make sense that one of the characters' main power is to, like, turn into paper? Like,
that's a One Piece power. Okay. Yeah. But no, I mean,
we were talking in the last episode, like, most powers seem to be, like, a nature or an element of some sort. Or
paper.
Like, or martial arts, but it's like I can literally turn into paper.
Like, that's just straight up a Logia fruit.
I mean, can, like, Is there another power where you can turn into, I don't know.
Pencil?
Well, I mean, you can turn into wood because wood is a natural thing and paper is kind of like wood in a sense. It's like wood. But like, can you,
I guess paper is like a special wood and water type.
Well, is it
reading into this way too much?
Well, yes, we are.
Yeah, like that's the problem.
Metal is just processed earth, you know?
Well, I think there is like a metal chakra nature. That might be a company.
I was totally agree with what he's saying with some of these rules and like what is...
Yeah, they aren't spelled out enough.
I see what you guys are saying about the fact that, oh, he's only using the animal thing. I get that. But what I'm saying is that like what he can do, it's never defined what these people can do. The fact that Jiraiya can summon two little tiny people on his shoulders and change his nose crazy, and then suddenly that's like makes him a badass. Like it's never been set up. I have no idea what's going on. I don't know if that's cool or good. I guess it is, but like
it sure is pretty.
Setup. Yeah. No. I mean that's actually a setup for later in this particular arc.
Well, yes, I get that. But my point is that like this world is so ambiguous about what people can do. When they do things, it's like if he can throw out all this stuff, I'm like, well, can't anyone do that? I don't know who can and can't do that.
Yeah,
I mean, I think the problem is that the basic rules of the powers are too complex.
I mean, there's also other things.
They're not explained well enough.
Like most of this story takes place in like it seems like it's a more this is the technology argument where it's like a more feudal Japan, like they're ninjas and like. What is their level of technology? But now we're in like a city with skyscrapers and piping and like, I think there was even like phone lines or something. Like what the heck?
No, it's just, I mean, part of the problem is none of this stuff was really thought out all that well.
I guess.
It's
I mean,
oh, whatever looks cool.
I mean, I guess my all I'm saying is that it was a very beautiful episode. It was exciting to watch, but when they're throwing their attacks at these magic attacks at each other, I don't know who's more powerful than who, and I don't know what they can do because they just seem to be able to do anything. Like he can just suddenly like create dimensional portals inside frog stomachs, and I'm like, okay, I guess that's a thing now.
Well, I mean, that was a thing earlier too.
But was it ever explained that did a character ever come on screen and go, Jiraiya, did you know that if you use the blah blah blah, you can create a portal inside a frog stomach?
I mean, at least in One Piece, characters can do anything, but one character really only does one thing.
Exactly, and they will probably have a scene where they're like, "I ate the blah blah fruit; it lets me do this." And then Naruto, we don't know what people can do,
and that also opens the door to like what he's saying is to what's the word? Like, if a character can kind of just do whatever they want, and we can have to kind of accept that, oh, they're allowed to do this, it kind of opens the door for things like Deus Ex Machina. Like, oh, he could have done this the whole time.
It's like, well, there's no reason I couldn't do this.
And that kind of gets into some of the Sharingan bullshit later. Like, oh, apparently the Sharingan can do this, and it can do that, and it can do all these things.
Like, I mean, part of the problem is that, like, the power system is... It does make sense when it's explained. None of it is really sort of applied very well to what everyone can do. You know,
because like in One Piece, there's kind of like a three-step power system. One, everyone has devil fruit powers. If you get them in water, they drown. There's base stage one. Every single power user has that in common. And then, you know, second tier, there's three different general types of devil fruits. Whoa. And then those specific types, you know, in a type, they all share certain things.
Well, on one hand, I don't want like powers to be like so delineated where it's like rigid and like you can only do this, you can only do that, and like you have to be like level one or level two to do level one things.
Like
you know, but
they do need to be explained more.
I don't think they need to be explained like so directly all the time.
No,
but you need to build like a character with a move set or like ability set that is consistent and believable. And then you have, like, sometimes you just have characters that can just do so many things, and it's like, well...
Like, I've seen Jiraiya, and I've seen Pain do things I've never seen anyone else do on this show before. I get that they're strong, but it's so... Their moves are so out there that it just makes me think, like, they might as well just be gods. I don't know what they can't do.
I mean, they're literally showing an endgame fight here in the middle of the show.
I mean, these are literally, at this point in the show, they're probably the two strongest characters.
Okay.
At this point in the show, before any sort of, like, bullshit later on, these are the two strongest characters in the show.
Well, you know, Madara's still running around, so I would say they're two and three.
Okay. Well, I mean, until Madara gets fixed up, he's not really on their level.
I mean, I assume at this point he can still do most of the stuff he does later.
Who's Madara? Like,
let me kind of say one thing. We've been criticizing the show a lot, but even though this section of the show kind of, I think, comes about almost too quickly, like they literally just established Nagato and Yahiko 3 episodes ago or whatever it was, 4 episodes ago. Mm-hmm. I still think this little mini arc with Jiraiya is probably one of the stronger things that Naruto has to offer.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I don't take my frustration with the power stuff as being that I didn't enjoy the episode, because if there's one thing I've learned about Shippuden is that whenever Naruto isn't around, the show is pretty good.
Except when Sasuke's around, then it's really bad.
Well, maybe, but I mean,
when Sasuke's around, I still think it's a little better. Like, for example, Sasuke taking on Deidara is a little bit more interesting than Naruto doing his Rasengan shadow clone spam on everything that he ever plays.
Well, I mean, in fairness, that was probably Sasuke's best fight.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think that was his best fight.
Yeah.
Everything after this point is
slide downhill. I actually have not seen the end of this arc. I think I stopped when the next filler arc hits, which is soon.
I mean,
I think we have a filler arc in like 10 episodes or something like that.
The aftermath of this fight is actually really good character building stuff. So, Seda, you're going to specifically like that.
Does the next episode, the one that airs this week, does it have the same high quality animation, or do they go back?
No, it does not.
Okay.
Oh, man.
The only other thing I'd say too is that the other thing I liked in this episode were the two little frog people, the elder frogs.
Oh, they're awesome.
They were pretty great.
Yeah, they're awesome.
I think it's kind of just refreshing. This is kind of a weird tangent, but like, so many of these shows are like dealing with like young people and young people problems. So it's kind of refreshing to have like this Jiraiya old guy, like old veteran, and then he summons this married couple. He's like this married couple of frogs, and they're just like back talking, having spousal arguments and things like that. It's kind of refreshing in a weird way.
This episode needed a little levity in it, and that those guys definitely brought it.
I mean, Jiraiya is literally a little levity.
Yeah, I mean that's mostly been his character.
It's like, hey, Jiraiya just walked in, aka a little levity just walked into the door.
Yeah. He's one of those characters that, like, he made scenes in the series better than they were. I think every, like, place he was in there in terms of, like, what's canon has always been, like, good scenes and, you know, good arcs and, you know, just whatever.
He's definitely a very good character to have around in this series. I get the impression that he won't be around much longer, unfortunately.
Yeah, you get the impression the show is basically saying, just putting in neon letters, Jiraiya's going to die.
Yeah, I can tell.
And how it happens is really going to piss you off.
Oh, boy. Well, don't say anymore, because I want to be pissed off by this. Because if it does it a bad way, I want to save it.
No, it's not so much that. It's that,
Yeah, don't say anything. Just go, and then step there. Yeah, you don't have to say anything.
I kind of started thinking recently about what the most famous spoilers in all of fiction are. And I came up with the two that stand above all the rest are Darth Vader is Luke's father, which is it's the spoiler. And then Snape kills Dumbledore.
Yeah, I think those are probably the two that everyone knows at this point.
Well, like and Rosebud.
I mean, that's kind of too
Rosebud.
Old.
Okay.
No, but I mean, like, there are spoilers that do enter, like, you know, our popular vernacular and our cultural unconscious, but none of them are Naruto spoilers.
Like, I think probably Rosebud and Kevin Spacey is the villain and Usual Suspects are the next two down.
Yeah,
Keezer Soze.
Like, I know what Rosebud refers to, but I don't really know what it means without context. Like,
do you want me to tell you?
I mean, I know it's his sled or something, but I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it's actually not that great. I mean,
it's just popular.
It's at the very beginning of the movie, Orson Welles' character says one word before he dies, which is Rosebud. And then the whole movie is an investigator trying to learn the life of him and what the meaning of the word is. And at the very end, you learn that it was his childhood sled. That's basically it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The greatest movie of all time, ladies and gentlemen.
It's a very good movie. Wait, is it actually
that's
on
one spoiler Hulu? I don't mind giving out because that's what we're talking like.
I mean, everyone knows it.
Yeah. I mean, all four of those spoilers I just said are, like, so famous everyone knows them. Darth Vader being Luke's father, I can't say when I learned that because I just feel like I came out of the womb knowing that.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, as soon as you're old enough to understand Star Wars
I don't know how old Seda is, but I'm old enough to have learned that in the theater.
Like, oh, wow. Like, I must have been, like, a baby, and my parents must have been watching Star Wars, and, like... My baby self didn't exactly register it, but, you know, but I still knew.
No, I mean, it's one of those spoilers that once you're old enough to find out
someone
Star Wars
says Star Wars, and then that comes out.
Like, like that's the second thing you learn after the title of the movie. You know, like, oh, Star Wars is a thing, and Vader is Luke's father. Apparently in Japan, there's one of the One Piece spoilers has entered their cultural unconscious in that sort of way, but we're a long way off from
that. I think I heard from you that, like, those types of things in Japan actually, like, make, like, national news, like, not just entertainment news, but,
local
news.
Yeah, well, I mean, you gotta understand, like, in Japan, One Piece is basically Harry Potter.
Right.
You know, like, levels of famousness.
Maybe,
like,
Harry Potter in England.
One Piece might get closer to Star Wars in Japan.
Yeah.
Like, it's just ridiculously popular. So that spoiler made the nightly news.
Kind of a random aside here. I had no idea there was, like, apparently, like, a side Harry Potter movie coming out this year.
Yeah.
Fantastic Beasts is apparently going to be 5 movies.
Yeah, like, I had never heard of this thing before. I'm like, wait, no, 5 movies? And it's, like, apparently, like, a Harry Potter spinoff? Like,
it's in America.
Yeah. Although it's not set, although it doesn't really have anything to do with Harry Potter. And
no, I know. It's set in the universe.
Yeah.
Like, there's enough space around Harry Potter that...
It's loosely based off of a book about, like, the animals and creatures in Harry Potter.
Like, it feels like J.K. Rowling is in kind of this... her and Masashi Kishimoto are in kind of like this phase where they're working themselves up to do another series, and then in the meantime they're just kind of making so much side stuff.
I was just surprised that, like, I saw the news that it was being 5 movies. I'm like, wait, what is this thing that's being 5 movies that I've never heard of? And they're it's related to Harry Potter.
Yeah, no, Rowling wrote the script for it. But, like, she is doing, like, other stuff that's not in another series, you know?
Well, she did the play, and, I mean...
Well, no, she didn't do the play.
I feel like it's only a matter of time before she says, here's a second Harry Potter series. It may not necessarily star Harry Potter.
In movie form.
Yeah, really. Well, I mean, like...
Here's Harry Potter.
I think she'll...
Harry Potter.
But, like, I think she'll go back to, like, Hogwarts at some point. It's sort of like you can't create something like that and then not feel tempted to go back eventually.
Like, she's introducing all these new... foreign magic schools, and I'm assuming she's going to do something with them.
Well, I mean, that's what Fantastic Beasts is.
She created those for Pottermore.
Yeah,
that's the Harry Potter podcast all of a sudden, by the way.
Maybe she's going to do something where she just, you know, lets other writers write in the universe.
I doubt it.
No, I don't think she'd do that. I think she likes, you know, like she's not going to want anyone to
mess
around.
Loves her world that she created, and she has very much a strong ownership over it. And
I mean, it did make her richer than the queen.
Yes. Yeah, no, honestly, the book I would hope she'd write at some point is, like, Dumbledore versus Grindelwald, you know, that relationship.
I wonder if we're going to get a little of that, though, because this is set in that time, this new movie.
Yeah, no, but this is in America, though, so...
Well, yeah, but maybe we'll see them cross paths or something. They probably travel the world.
I mean, that would be really cool if we got to see that fight, because apparently that was, like, the stuff of legends.
Yeah.
See, Kohler, just make a timestamp for Harry Potter.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that.
I actually just read all the books again.
You know what? I actually have the audiobooks of several of them, and I usually listen to them around this time of year, right around Halloween.
Yeah.
Because of the witches.
I mean, Halloween, Christmas, the books really work around this time of year.
And you'll find it, a movie airing on ABC Family, like, every other night.
That's true.
Yeah,
I guess I wonder how much stuff is on Audible. I kind of want to listen to some old childhood books.
Like, go back and find
Audible just, like, have everything?
Not everything, no. But
no.
They have a lot.
Like, go back and try and, like, find Animorphs or something, because that shit gets dark.
Oh, yeah, Animorphs is, like, Calera dark.
I actually,
like, that one, like, that, like, one guy just gets stuck as a falcon forever.
That's the first book.
Like, that's not even the darkest shit that happens in that book. Like, I went through it last summer just for a laugh, and I'm like, holy shit, what the is even happening here?
So my memory is a little bit foggy, but, like, I remember the character Rachel gets, like, killed in a pretty gory, bloody way. It's like, really?
Yeah, no, she kamikazes a motherfucker while the other guys are off committing genocide.
I'm sorry if you were wanting to read Animorphs, anyone who was listening to this. But
right after our big spoiler cast.
I mean, we only just talked about the spoilers that literally everyone knows. But
that's true, but now we've got Animorph spoilers.
Anyway, speaking of other things we love to spoil.
Oh, gosh.
One Piece.
Here we go.
One Piece episode 365, Luffy is the enemy, the ultimate zombie versus the Straw Hat crew. So this is the episode where Orz just wastes everyone.
Yep.
Like, Orz is just too beastly for this world.
Yep.
Like, he just completely wrecks the crew.
And Moria is just like, whatever.
I'm still running!
I don't even remember where he's going. He's just running.
He's just going away.
Well,
I think he's just bothered.
But one thing I am a little bit like, well, I guess they took Sanji's and Zoro's shadows and like, oh, we don't need those zombies. Let's kill him. He's probably running because he doesn't want Orz to kill Luffy because then that'll kill Orz.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he's leading Luffy away from the fights. What's happening?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. It's also, you know, buying time until the sun comes up, supposedly. And
apparently, Absalom is fine and well. Well, maybe not fine, but he's still alive.
Well, no, he's not. I don't think he's fighting time until the sun comes up, because then Luffy would get melted, and then he wouldn't have Orz anymore.
Oh, yeah, you're right. No, but Absalom, he's okay now. I mean, he's not okay, but he's alive.
So yeah, literally, Sanji's entire fight just was a complete waste of time. He achieved nothing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's about par for the course for Sanji.
It was good of him to step up. I liked the joke with Orz realizing that the poster was supposed to be Sanji because he looks exactly the same, even though he doesn't.
Like, Sanji literally plays himself, but Orz is like, this looks exactly like you. He's like, no, it doesn't!
I feel like the setup to that joke was almost two on the nose, but not really. Like, don't worry, he won't recognize you because you don't look like your poster. Hey, you look like your poster, you know? It was kind of just enough to be amusing.
That poster is just the source of endless comedy for Sanji.
the literal gift that keeps on giving.
It keeps giving.
Yeah.
Now, in traditional One Piece fashion, the first part of this episode was a little bit slow. It was just like, it showed, like, the reaction faces to, like, Robin and Zoro and Brooke, like,
Like, Brooke had his mouth open, like, 2 feet wide for 10 minutes.
It's all because they wanted to end the episode with all the Straw Hats just knocked out. They wanted to end it at that point, and so they had to fill that moment with that stuff.
It's like last week with Hunter Hunter. They wanted to end it with her getting shot in the head, so.
Yeah. Typical toy pacing to make sure that an episode ends at a certain spot, so they have to fill it with just reaction shots and stuff.
Yeah.
Although, the Brooke face is pretty funny.
And Ian Sinclair is such a great voice actor. I mean, even just like, I have to imagine that even just doing that, like, whatever he was doing, like, in his, like, shocked face was, like, that's got to be hard to do.
Like, I actually realized how tough it must be to do long-running shonen, to be the voice actors and kind of do those
efforts. They call them effort sounds.
And they're not even doing anything. They're just kind of standing there filling dead space by just making grunts.
And nothing against the Japanese voice for Brooke, but I mean, if Ian Sinclair ever heard me say this, I would love it. It's just that I think he owns the character even more so than the original voice actor. I think he completely embodies Brooke. He made Brooke better character for me.
One of his lines in an episode like two episodes ago that I thought was really great and kind of exactly embodies what you just said was like, it does whatever my body does. When you're talking about his shadow, and the way he said it was like perfect.
Yeah.
And Brooke is such a hard character to voice because the things he says are just so out there and weird all the time.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, to be able to pull that off. He's a skeleton with an afro, you know?
Yeah. We haven't heard the best of Brook yet. That's to come later.
That's to come next year, which is probably going to make him a back-to-back winner of Best Voice Actor.
Oh, God.
Got amazing stuff coming.
Although I suppose I would be willing to give it to Patrick Seitz as Dio this year because he's going to, you know, Ian Sinclair is a lock for next year.
You got to give it to him both years.
Is it pronounced Seitz?
I thought it was Seitz.
I'd say Seitz.
Whatever.
Yeah, no, it's got to go to Ian Sinclair because, I mean, we're going to get like 3 or 4 episodes of JoJo before the year is out, and that's not enough.
Don't forget that he said, oh, yes, I poop.
Oh, yes. Can I see your panties?
We're like, can I see your panties?
No way! He kind of steals the show from Chris Guerrero's Moria, which, you know, he's doing the character that basically exactly like he would, like you need him to do in English, but.
Yeah.
What's one thing about One Piece that I think is just really good, like voices that are more cartoony but still totally believable, like Hildon, for example.
Yeah.
Like, I think Hildon's voice actor, whoever it is, it's not the voice you'd find like on any other character, but it like totally works and it's believable.
Yeah.
This like fat bat sidekick thing.
Yeah, I feel like One Piece's level of comedy, its type of comedy, its tone, and the art style all lend it more towards allowing voice actors to sound more like cartoons and get away with it and have it fit versus a more serious show where if you had a really bad voice actor who sounds cartoony in it, it's going to sound cheap.
Yeah.
Hildon had a really bad day this episode.
Oh, God.
And suddenly everyone shit on Hildon.
I mean, just talking about the voices, I also like Hogback's voice is, I think, great. You know,
just hilarious.
Those cartoony voices like that work in the show, like he was saying.
Perona's great.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a question for you guys. Something I noticed about Hogback, and also, I guess, in a way, kind of about Cell, too. We know that, like, for some reason, our Japanese anime and culture seem to be really, they really love their Beatles. They just love their Beatles. I don't understand where that comes from, but Did you notice
the insect or the band?
The insect.
They like both.
But the insect. I'm talking about the insect because did you guys notice that Hogback looks like a beetle? Like the way his cape was, he had the beetle wings on the back. And how did he die?
Yeah.
He got like smushed by oars like a beetle would get smushed.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like they have a lot of beetles there and apparently bug catching is a thing kids do. So.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might be that.
I know it showed
up. This reminds me that I'm still kind of wondering what exactly that large, massive thing he was, you know, they were standing around in the ballroom was.
Maybe it's his stuff, like he was trying to escape with it or something.
Like he's just straight up given up.
Yeah.
Like, because that, I don't think that can be it because, you know, he has no expectation that he's going to have to bail.
By the way, I guess that was shown in this episode that all the zombie, like, animal zombies. We're all huddled around Perona and like, she's alive. She's alive. She's just knocked out still.
I mean, of course she's alive. Usopp isn't a fucking murderer.
No.
No, he just hit her with a fake hammer.
Well, I'm trying to remember. Didn't she eventually get knocked out because she was so frightened by fake bugs? Beetles?
Yes. There you go.
Like cockroaches.
It was Usopp and his fake 10-ton hammer.
She was literally losing her mind because of the cockroaches and then the pop of the hand, and then just the pop was like the last straw.
The thing I didn't like about that, the only thing I did not like about that is that they throw in a line, and it may have been in the manga, that he goes, oh, you're afraid of just a bunch of toy cockroaches. Like, why make them toys? Why didn't they just have real cockroaches?
Because Usopp's afraid of real cockroaches.
I think it's just to show, like, he's still being deceptive.
Okay.
Plus, I don't think Usopp would like real cockroaches. Like, you think he doesn't seem like... Yeah, I don't think he'd be the dude who's like, oh, cockroaches, yeah, I'll carry them around.
I don't think it would be convenient to carry them around either, so I guess toy ones make more sense. But I just thought, they're crawling around on her, why not make them real ones? Anyway, that's just a side thing.
Whatever. Wait, is next episode the episode where they...
Well, don't say it, but I know what you're talking about. I'm not sure. It might be.
I hope it is.
Okay, what's the title of the next episode? Who knows?
Give me a second.
I can tell from that.
Yeah, we should be able to.
I am going to search for the Metatron post.
We really owe him for doing that every week.
Yeah, good job, dude.
Why doesn't he have a tag yet?
I don't know.
Next week's episode is called You're Going Down, Absalom, Nami's Lightning Attack of Friendship.
Oh, okay. So that's that fight. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, we get to see Nami do Nami
wakes up finally. But just the fact that she's been asleep for so long, it's one of the things in this arc that just really goes just like unexplained and doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, she
He didn't even do anything to her. He just grabbed her and is like, "Oh, I'm asleep now."
Oh no, did she get hit by the ghosts?
No.
No, I think he just roofied her or something.
Yeah, I think it just kind of implied that she was given like a sleeping pill or whatever.
The title of the next JoJo episode is A Letter from the Past, which sounds like a Hunter x Hunter recap episode.
Hi, Mom. We're visiting an assassin family.
I got beat up by one of the assassin butlers.
She got shot in front of me.
Shit is fucked.
There's a giant dog. He's so cute.
Holy shit. I love how he saw that dog and he was just like, fucking nope.
He's like, no, I can't talk to that.
Like, usually Gond is just the guy who just walks straight into snakes and he sees this dog and he's like, nope.
And again, I mean, not to dwell too much on that world, but like, I don't know who they were, but those thugs who broke into their compound, and they're like, oh, there's the dog. The dog's going to take care of those people, and with the intent that dog is going to eat those people.
Yeah.
And everybody's just aloof about it. They're just like, oh yeah, those people will die.
I mean, they're assassins. What do you want?
I like how the look of those
guys. And the way that people just fluff it off and blow it off like it's no big deal. Always just
you can describe it in a single image with the skeleton in the trash can.
Right. And it's like, that's a joke in this world.
With a frowny face. But no, those guys who Canary fucked up, they kind of looked like they just walked right out of One Piece.
They did, yeah. They look like pirates.
Yeah. I think one of them was a hunter, but not a very good one.
Like, the main big guy was a hunter, and it's like, how the fuck? Were their standards poor back then?
No, I think he only passed the first test. I don't, I think he passed the hunter exam, but never bothered going any further than that.
Well, we've looped back around on ourselves, haven't we?
Yes.
We really have.
Have we got anything more to say about this episode of One Piece?
There's good stuff coming up.
Great stuff.
Oh, yes.
The fact that it ends on everyone being wasted by oars, you know, you immediately know what scene's coming up.
Oh, yes. God. Oh, ultimate teamwork.
I think H-Town was like, are there combo attacks in this fight? And there's like, dude, there's four combo attacks on oars. Yes.
And one is glorious.
Anyway.
All right.
Well, we've played this out enough, so that'll be the end of the podcast for this week. Thank you, Seda.
All right.
Have we really been talking for 2 hours?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Hey, man, JoJo and then One Piece.
How long was Harry Potter? How long was our award podcast last year? Like 4 or 5
hours? Four and a half-ish hours.
That was God, we're going to have to quarter off an entire day for that one.
Like, I'm going to be like, be prepared to get up at like, I believe like, 10. Be prepared to start at like 10 in the morning. Ugh. And quarter off like 6 hours.
When are we doing that one?
I'm going to basically allow Gundam and DBZ Kai, not Buu Arc, and JoJo Part 1 to end. So we're going to, cover a little bit of stuff from 2017, but...
Alright.
So, as soon as all three of those are done, and it'll only be those specific three shows that are trying to end.
Alright.
Thank you, C. Kohler.
My pleasure.
And thank you, B-Dubs.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week for episode 29. See you later.
Bye. Where we will hopefully find out what the hell all the stuff in Iron Blooded Orphans is about.
Probably not.
No, I don't think so. Later.